Indie Prime, it's Indie Prime on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, it's Indie Prime on Indie Live Radio.
Welcome to the Indie Prime podcast on IndieLive.radio. And my special guest this week is Rosa Sally. Rosa, hello.
Hello, hi. Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. Now, Rosa is very infamous in certainly more than one way. Recently, it's been announced that she will be standing as a potential candidate for Clydebank and Milngavie for the SNP, and previously well known for one of the Glasgow girls. So you've got a good story to tell. Now, I'd like to cover those in a short while, but first of all, can you tell us about yourself, Rosa, your history, where you came from, and because you're also unique in being a candidate, that would be, I believe I'm correct in saying the first female BAME candidate that would be potentially elected.
The first refugee.
That's it, first refugee.
I think throughout Scotland and throughout the UK probably as well. So I originally am from Kurdistan. That is a region where it's divided between four countries, Iraq, Syria, Iran, and Turkey. The Kurdish people are 40 million people without a state. They are probably the largest nation in the world without a state today. So that's where I come from. I come from the south of Kurdistan, which is the Iraqi part of Kurdistan. I came to Scotland when I was 12 years old. So I've grown up since then in Scotland. I campaigned when I was only 15 years old, and I was in Drumchapel High School. And with my friends from the school, we started to campaign to end child detention in the UK. Really, what kind of made us to campaign was one of our friends in the same classroom. She was downgraded and detained. Really, we didn't think of it as such a big campaign at the time because we were only teenagers and wanted to save our friend. We were all of us, Scottish, Somalian, Polish, Kosovan, we all were friends from international countries. So yeah, that's how we I became an activist from a very young age. I understood that my friend needed saving, and we came together and done something about it. We challenged the First Minister, Jack McConnell, at the time, to change policies. It was really, I look back and it was an interesting time because we also won the campaign year, the Politician Year Awards in 2005. So we were like teenagers from Drumchapel High challenging the First Minister. I think it's a huge story, and the newspapers called us the Glasgow Girls. We also did a filming with the BBC. It was a documentary filming. It was supposed to be about how asylum seekers and refugees integrate in Scotland. There was two of us. The other girl was from Somalia and I was from Kurdistan. And basically they wanted to know our daily life and how we live in Scotland. And really, we had a wee camera, so we were filming through school, our community, neighborhood, and so on. And, all of a sudden, our friend was downgraded and detained. We asked the producer of the film, can we change it to highlight this issue? And that's how it started, the Glasgow Girls story.
Wow. So what sort of support did you have from the school staff and also parents?
It was huge support. The community, the janitors, the churches, the local church were very supportive. Everybody, in the neighborhood, came and signed our petition. You know, you're our children. It was amazing. It was like a community campaign, really, because people say it was only seven girls. I would say, no, it was everybody. Please. It was not seven of us. It was the whole community. So I think that's why it was so powerful. You know, we, as a community, I think it was a community empowerment as well. How we, you know, we showed the policymakers, the government, you know, you can't just do this. We're going to challenge you. And I think that's how it's so powerful, because we managed to save our friend, and we managed to change policies and end child detention. And I think, like, I go to schools, I get invited to local schools every time, and I've been to Clydebank Primary School, and the young people just get inspired by the story, and because they also feel like they could campaign on something they are passionate about. They feel like they could make changes to what is the issue to them. So I think it's inspirational and powerful for young people and young generation that, you know, the power is the local community. And since then, I've campaigned on different issues. I've become like a campaigner. I think that's all I've known since I was a very young person. And I think that's kind of the Glasgow Girls campaign influenced me to be who I am today.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the story, really.
Yeah. And I believe a musical was made about it as well, was it?
Yes, there was a musical theater made, and it was shown in the National Citizen Theater, also the King's Theater. And yeah, it was a really good show in Glasgow and throughout Scotland. I think it was played in Dundee and Stirling. Some of the universities also was played there as well. So yeah, it's become a really positive campaign that shows, you know, the power of people.
Yeah. Now, I did hear that you, at school, that you did suffer some racial abuse yourself, and people came back to you later and apologised as the years gone by.
Yeah.
What sorts of abuse did you receive?
I think it was difficult because, you know, English is not my first language. And, you know, as a teenager, you know, you face a lot of barriers just being a teenager. And, you know, but I faced a lot of racism because, you know, I had different background maybe, or the color of my skin. Maybe I wasn't speaking perfectly, and, you know, I was kind of, you know, was faced these racism, and I don't really like to talk about them because it was a hard time when I was very young. But what I like to talk about, some of them was, you know, I saw them in Durham Chapel, and they came to me and they said, you know, they're sorry that, you know, how they treated me at that time, and they didn't understand, like, who I was, and they do now. And, you know, we become friends, and I see their children, you know, in shopping centers and on the road. So I think that was very, like, it kind of gave me closure to my kind of childhood. And I think that was very big of them. They came up to me and apologized, and I'm always going to be grateful for that because, as I said, it gave me closure.
Yeah, because it's good when individuals do that, because I think in many cases it could be peer pressure, because people coming together in the gang and they think, well, we don't want to feel out of place, so we'll be racist as well.
You're right, Ray, and it definitely was a peer pressure because they might have not felt that way, but because of their peers, they felt like they had to say something at that time to make them look good. And probably they weren't racist at all. And I've made a lot of friends. I made great friends from school. I have great Scottish friends that I'm still in touch with, and I still talk to them on Facebook. So, you know, you get good ones and bad ones.
Yeah. So What was life like for yourself in South Kurdistan to bring you to become a refugee?
You know, I came here when I was 12 years old, so I was very, very young. I can say that, you know, I can explain all the experience my parents went through, but I could say it was a hard time because my family member were executed.
Oh dear.
For believing, you know, for self-determination and independence for the Kurdish people under the Saddam Hussein regime. So it was really, really hard. And I understand why my family made a decision to leave our country.
I'm not surprised.
So, you know, I think, and altogether, the Kurdish people still are fighting to have their own country. And that is something that has attracted me to the Scottish National Party, you know, because I do truly believe in independence and decision being made by the people. Decision being made by the people because look at what's happening right now with the UK government stopping, you know, not extending the furlough scheme. Many jobs are at risk. 61,000 jobs are at risk in Scotland, and the Tories are refusing to extend the furlough scheme. So if we had our own, you know, we had these powers in the Scottish government, the Scottish Parliament, we could make this decision. We don't need to ask the UK government to do that for us. You know, that is just a small example of how important it is to make decision for your own people.
Rosa, how do you feel the knowledge bases of the Scottish population in relation to the implications of the UK government's internal market bill?
I think the implication is huge, and I don't think that it has received the attention of the main media to talk about how the internal market bill is going to affect the Scottish government decision making, because, you know, the economy is at risk, and that means that the Scottish government won't be having those powers. So I think it's huge, and as I said, it has not received any media attention to it at all. And I think, you know, mainstream media is, I think that's the main problem as well in our movement, because they are with the statu quo. They're not changing their position that much, and they're not with the people at all. Like, let's look at BBC. Let's talk about BBC. I mean, the people are there who actually work there. They don't know what the local issues are. They don't really know what working class people are. There's a lot of differentiation of who actually reports news nowadays.
I've always had a feeling that, you know, the polls are going in the right direction at the moment, but they will really kick in when people actually are personally affected by parliamentary decisions. And that's the wake-up call for most people, is when something personally affects them. And at the moment, a lot of the information or a lot of the aspects of what's going to happen are unknown to people. It'll just come as a shock, for example, come January the 1st.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that, you know, leaving the EU is the, you know, that is the hugest economic risk, really, to where we are. And on top of that we have to recover from coronavirus, and we are facing the biggest economic challenges. And if we had the powers to, you know, even look at, even if employment was devolved, that would make a huge difference to Scotland itself. And clearly we've seen the growth of precarious work through self-employment and zero-hour contracts, and also unwanted part-time work has been encouraged by, and this is something that I think is very problematic. And if we had these powers, then we could make our own employment laws, legally changing them. And I think we need to understand how important is decision-making bodies and you making the decision. And I think that is what we need to try to convince other people. You know, I did talk about the furlough scheme, but just imagine where we would be with an independent country. Look at, you know, we're gaining social security powers hopefully soon, and I hope that we create a fairer system that we have in place right now. And, you know, at this moment, there's a lot of jobs at risk. millions of people are claiming universal credit and they're living on that benefit. So, you know, we have to really invest in our communities and invest in jobs and making life much easier for the people that lives, you know, for even a short period of time that we come on Earth. We don't need to struggle. We could create a fairer society. We can do it. You know, there is a lot of research, and there's, you know, the basic income. It's something it could be looked into in the Scottish Parliament. So there's a lot of opportunities, you know, that we could develop as a country, but these powers need to be given to the Scottish people.
Could you tell me about your work regarding trade unions? I understand you've been very active in that field.
Yes, I'm a very proud trade unionist, and I became a trade unionist from a very young age. I was a student at the time at university when I became a trade unionist, and I got involved campaigning against the zero-hour contracts, and I campaigned for equal pay for young workers. I raised concern for young workers in STC General Council. I developed a great relationship with the trade union movement, and until today I advocate for public ownership as well. Is very, very important. I think we cast aside how important it is for communities to have, you know, to have ownership of land and communities and gain involved. And community councils is another one that I would like to encourage more people to get involved. Because in our community council, many people are not aware that that is for residents to get involved. This is for them to have a say. They could talk about the issues that are affecting them. And I think we need to promote community councils more for residents. And I think that is what's, it's not just like in our the constituency I'm standing. I think throughout Scotland, we need to encourage more people to be involved in their community councils.
Yeah, because they certainly seem to do so on social media, making complaints left, right and centre, but without getting involved on the actual decision-making side. Places like Orkney, Shetland and the Western Isles are looking for greater autonomy of powers. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, autonomy for community councils, yes, I am for it. More decision-making, I'm for it, but not really becoming independent, because they are they're from Scotland, you know. And I don't know, I have mixed feelings, but recently there was the Shetland, one of the colleges is being privatized, and they're campaigning against it. Right this moment we're speaking, I just retweeted the Shetland College. I'm against privatization, and I agree with public ownership and public services. So I'm all for that college to stay as public in Shetland. I mean, autonomy to a certain point where people can make decisions, probably in community council, I think it needs a lot of empowerment. Community councils, like, for example, planning permissions are submitted that the community council should be aware of, they should have a say in. So I think more involvement is very, very important in community council. That's something I think will have a huge effect or positive changing. I was reading the minutes of the community council on Old Kilpatrick and some of the Mel Guy, and like climate change was one of the biggest issues as well, and something that, you know, is throughout the world as the biggest issue, but rebuilding public services and democratic public ownership, and through the Green Deal we can invest in our communities. I believe we can create new good quality jobs for the community itself, and we need to invest in that. And I've always said I am not afraid of actually rattling the cage, you know, to get more money and investment for the community, because, you know, my background is a campaigner, and if I get selected, I will be campaigning. Doesn't mean, you know, I'm an MSP, I will be campaigning for local issues, campaigning day out, you know, and working hard for the community. That's something that I'm passionate about since I was very young.
Yeah. Well, to be able to rattle the cage, Rosa, one needs some foundation of experience. So I understand you work for Chris Stevens as an office manager. Have you worked for other MPs or MSPs previous?
Bill Kidd, that was my constituency. I campaigned for Bill. I've campaigned for a lot of MSPs. I've campaigned for Humza Yousaf. I've campaigned for Bob Doris. I've campaigned a lot, but I worked with Chris because I got to know him through the trade union movement. He came to one of the conference, the trade union holds every year, and I met him there, and I went and congratulated him on his speech, and I said it's great to have a pro-independent person to speak, an SNP member. So really, that's how I got to know Chris, and I saw that he was advertising for a job, and I applied, and now 5 years on, I still work for him.
Very good. Right. So could you give listeners a bit of a background of what that job entails?
Yeah. So every day every day I work with councillors, MSPs, on different issues, so like bin collections, littering, grass cutting, and every issues locally you can hear of, we report it to the council. If a constituent gets in touch, we deal with housing issues. I don't deal with a lot of housing issues, but if someone's homeless, we make sure that they're registered to be homeless and they're on a waiting list. We deal with benefits on a daily basis. We help people to receive universal credit. It's been a huge amount of people applying for it. And helping disabled people with personal independence payment and attendance allowance for the older people. So really, it's a range of issues throughout we deal with. It could be settlement, a family settlement. It could be family reunion, immigration issues. I deal with challenging employers for the furlough scheme. You know, a constituent, one example was receiving statutory maternity pay on furlough, and she wasn't getting the 80%. And I challenged the employer, and I was like, you know, you're not paying her right. So she got 300 extra money every month.
Excellent.
And that was a huge change for her. And, you know, local businesses, the business grant was a huge work. We made sure that the businesses received their grants and they had money during the coronavirus. So saving local business really is a lot of a range of issues. So I do understand how parliamentary it works, how the responsibilities and making sure that constituents are satisfied, and we deal with the issue and work hard. Every day is a new day. You wake up and you have a different case, and the challenge is ahead, and you make sure you get results for them. So I really enjoy that. I enjoy helping constituents, and that's something that keeps me going every day. Really, that's why I'm standing to be the candidate for the Scottish Holyrood election.
Is there any particular standout case that you've dealt with, any particular standout case that gave you most satisfaction to achieve a result?
To be honest with you, I have a lot of standouts. One constituent had degenerative bone disease. Her mobility car was taken away from her, and basically her PIP was refused. She had no credit, and I campaigned for her. I challenged DWP that they should award her PIP and her mobility car should be returned to her, and wrote a really good letter explaining her story and, you know, her health issues and why they need to make a different decision. And I was very pleased because she did get her car back and she was awarded a higher level of personal independence payment. So I was very pleased with it, and the constituent was very happy. So we get a lot of good results, I have to say, in the constituency. And I think it's very important the power of parliamentary offices have, and it shows you how you can be effective and how you can bring positive results. You know, there was a local Chinese restaurant, vegetarian restaurant in Glasgow, and we did very well. We saved that restaurant, and the constituent invested over 400,000 in the business and employed local people in Glasgow, and we managed to save the business. So there's a lot of positive stories, so that's just two of them, but I could tell you more.
Yeah, because you're very well, you never usually hear any stories like that, you know. That's why people, that's why I was asking the question, because I'm sure I'm the same as many listeners who don't realize exactly what you do and probably the gratitude that a lot of people have for the work that you do. Is it 9 to 5, or do you also include having to work extra hours?
It's always, I would say I do extra hours, but you know, we get flexi as well. Chris has been a trade union employer, it has helped. You know, when we do overtime, he realizes that, and we can have some time off if it's quiet. You know, we know there's not a lot of work to be done, but during the coronavirus, you know, we have to make sure that guidance is given out to constituents, making sure that they're aware of the updates. So it has been very hard working from home, you know, making sure our staff also are supported, you know, making sure their mental health as well. And as a manager, I have to make sure the staff are doing well as well and they can manage the casework. So taking care of them as well.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on UK immigration, social and employment legislation?
I'm like, there's so much problems. With immigration, it's very restricted. Immigration policies we have. It's very difficult how to explain, but it's very hostile.
What changes would you like to see in an independent Scotland?
I would like to see a fairer immigration system built in Scotland that welcome people who need home, who actually are genuine people that have run away from their own country, from war zones, and that, you know, many people cannot relate in here, or the mass majority people in Scotland do understand. And I think that's what is different approach that we can take. I have been welcomed in Scotland, and I feel like if I wasn't welcome in a way, I wouldn't feel confident to stand. And I think that is giving me that confidence and a push to believe that, you know, I can do the job, and that welcoming has really, I'm appreciative of it, and I want to work hard for the community that has given me opportunity, have given me the opportunity to be educated in this country. Otherwise, I wouldn't have where I've come from. So it's all of these opportunities, you know, the positive. What we see in Scotland is, I mean, it's a different approach already. So why won't we? I think we will be creating a fair system. And I can't wait for that, really, and to be a part of that, to create that fairer society. I personally was just blown away how quickly Scotland and its people welcomed me, and that is something I will never forget. And that's why I passionately believe in Scottish independence. I want to work every day hard for the community because they deserve it. The people are just very good people, and you know, every day I've met good people, that supported me. You know, I met good people in school that supported me, teachers and friends. I went to university. I met great people supporting me and welcomed me. And even through my work, I have been welcomed, even through my trade union. Everywhere I have gone, you know, the people have given me a welcoming and, you know, welcome arms to me. And that is something that's why, you know, I will forever be grateful for Scotland.
What did you study at university?
I studied, you'll be surprised. I studied law and politics at the University of Strathclyde. I actually stood for election in the university as well. I really enjoyed being a student, and I felt like I learned so much through Strathclyde. I had great professor. John Curtis was one of them.
Really?
Maybe he was influenced me to get into politics. So yeah, you know, I there was great teachers and professors at the university that inspired you to get involved in politics. Yeah.
You said earlier that English wasn't your first language. How many languages do you speak?
I speak three fluently and maybe Glaswegian. Yeah, so I speak Kurdish and Arabic and
You find that having the ability to be multilingual is beneficial in other educational areas?
Yes, I think so. And I was reading a really interesting article saying that if you're multilingual, you can live longer. So I don't know how the facts are correct, though. I don't quote me here. But I think it's very beneficial because you meet diverse people and from different communities, and it's great to kind of support them. From my work, you know, sometimes you need interpreters. I was an interpreter before. I had other jobs before, and I was an interpreter for over a year. So, you know, they come to the office and we don't need to hire an interpreter. They're like, I can do it. I volunteer for this job. So I think it's very helpful because you can communicate, especially with Glasgow being a very diverse city. So you meet different people in different communities. So you can help and understand what the problems is and trying to resolve the issue.
Right. In relation to your candidacy, did you decide to stand for Clydebank and Milngavie constituency, or was it offered to you?
No, I made that decision. Honestly, I was approached by other constituencies to stand. I was, you know, Iskirbright was one of the other seats that I knew Linda Fabiani for over 15 years. And when the Glasgow Girls campaign started, she was very advocate for children's rights. And, you know, through her campaign also, asylum seekers and refugees' rights were embedded into the United Nations Children's Rights Convention. So it was something that, you know, people were saying I should go for the seat. But really, I felt strongly connected to the constituency, Clydebank and Milngavie, and let's not forget Bearsden North. It brought me forward for the constituency because I just grew up around the corner in Drumchapel. So it's natural to me. I was like, I want to stand. And I knew the great work of Gil Paterson as well. He has been a community champion. He has done outstanding work. And the other amazing policy changes like the post-mortem examination defense time limit bill have been great. He's done a lot of work on that. And I really just got connected to the seat. And I'm sure Gil Paterson, whoever the candidate is going to be, I think it will not be an easy task to kind of follow his footsteps. But I believe I have the experience and proven track records that will allow me to build on Gil's work and in the coming years and delivering for the community. And of course, in an independent Scotland, it would be an amazing vision.
Another one of Gill's recent projects that's still to flourish, and that's the establishment of the Pictish circles at Duntaca Faithfully area. That I feel personally that will be a phenomenal attraction to bring tourists out with COVID to the area to see something historic without having to travel to the far north of Scotland or the islands to see something of such phenomenal age.
I definitely. And also I believe that the West Highland Way is one of the top longest distance walks in the UK. And I visitors, I believe there needs to be investment further in that for like a visitor support where more people can come along and walk the long distance in West Highland Way. So at the constituency, has a lot of, you know, potential, and already people are talking about it right now in the main media. And I am very passionate about the constituency. I know a lot of local issues, like, for example, there's a lack of support pitches, which must be addressed. The train service and transport links needs improvement. The new hub in Melgai, I think the investment needs to be made. And I understand in Melgai, the wish is for the town hall to be improved. So all of these I will take on board and make sure that the constituents are satisfied.
Now, Clydebank is going to be a big challenge because there's lots of work that is required in Clydebank. In fact, I was down today and I was really impressed with some of the construction projects that are going on round and about the academy down there. So it's going to be a buzz in the future, but it's really suffered over the last few years with quite a few businesses closing and shops closing. What sort of challenge do you find that will be?
Clydebank needs a lot of investment. The roads and the infrastructure, I know there's a new bridge at the Dock Street. Really, I think there's generally poor standard of road maintenance in the area. There needs to be more social housing, affordable quality housing. I believe the social housing management, this is an idea I have, and I think the community should be on the board committee. And they should have a say in the social housing platform, and that would change things for better. You know, the bus routes and the changes to services need to be improved. These are a lot of local issues. So I would improve the infrastructure and transport links in Clydebank, but definitely investment in jobs and making sure there are more social housing in the area, which can improve people's lives.
One question I was going to ask you, Rose, was have you had past experience within the independence movement out with the SNP?
So, yes. I mean, in 2014, as I said, I was an advocate of a Yes movement. And during my student life, I advocated for Yes. I organized a meeting for all political parties to come along in my student union at Strathclyde University. So I was involved in that. So all of the political parties came and had a say, but I was a pro-Yes person and I tried to speak to students and advocate for a Yes movement. So I was campaigning through my university. But I was not an SNP member. I joined the SNP just after the referendum because I believe through the SNP we can achieve independence. I enjoyed through my student life to campaign for students to register and to vote for a Yes Scotland.
Have you been on any marches for independence?
I've been on so many marches Oh, for independence. I cannot say all of them. You know, I've had saltire flags on my cheeks, painting everywhere and holding flags and going marching in, you know, streets to streets. So I have done that. I have been, you know, a pro-US campaigner since 2013. And I believe passionately, and I believe strongly that an independent Scotland would be much better country and a fairer society, and that's why I'm campaigning for it.
So, canvassing, Rosa, it's going to be a challenge this time. Okay, your first hurdle is going to be to get chosen by the membership of the SNP within Bearsden and Milngavie constituency, which includes Old Kilpatrick, Bearsden North, Duntochter, Faithley. With the COVID, it's all change, because let's assume for a moment that you are successful and you've achieved the vote from the membership, then they wish you to stand as the MSP.
Yeah.
How different will it be under COVID to get your message out to the public?
I think it will have its challenges. However, I am a person very well known to the media, and I think that could be an advantage for the constituency. We can highlight issues for the constituency. I think digital improvement and digital training classes, for especially for older people, I'll encourage that for the members and the constituents. So there's a lot of creative new ways that we can try to help the constituency, making sure that the local economic growth continues and gets stronger. I believe I can communicate with constituents during the coronavirus, and hopefully there will be a solution to this by next year. You know, there might be a vaccine, so things can change. I'm aware that there's a bill might be going through the Scottish Parliament that the voting days will be extended to 2 days for the polling day. So that could change, you know, not everybody, there will be social distancing while people are going to vote. So I think there will be challenges, but through changing policies and guidances, we can make sure that those changes are made for the public.
Rosa, that's super. Well, Rosa, thank you very much indeed for your time on the Indie Prem podcast today. It's been really interesting to meet you and hear your story.
Thank you very much. Can I just, by ending, I appreciate you inviting me on the broadcast, and I it's a pleasure meeting you, you know, not face to face, but through Zoom. And, you know, let's keep on fighting for independence, and let's keep on the hope for a better future, and that, you know, we could see the Scotland to be independent, nuclear-free Scotland, an independent country that have, you know, inspiring other nations and other countries to look forward, to look into Scotland's hopeful policies and changing. So thank you very much. I really appreciate, you know, speak to me about who I am and why I'm standing for the constituency. So it's a pleasure talking
to you. Well, Rosa, I've got just one more request to make of you. Now, okay, listeners for Indie Live Radio can be around the world. Your platform obviously is going to be Clydebank and Milngavie. But I'd like you to give a message to people throughout Scotland who are observing at this point in time some angst in relation to the way we're going to independence. Some people feel it's too slow, and it's causing a lot of bad feeling certainly on social media. What words of calm would you give?
I think we are right now recovering from a virus that it's a challenging time, but we are going towards independence together, and the polls are showing it's never been stronger, and we will continue fighting for an independent Scotland. We will continue to fight for the Scottish people to have a say. Scotland will not be silent. Scotland's hope and dreams will be heard. And the, as myself being a candidate, I feel so strongly about it. And I think we are going in the right direction. We are speaking and advocating for independence, and it will come true because many people are on boards already, and we are changing other parties to join our party. So I think we are on a route, and you know, the best interests of the Scottish people will be heard through independence. So that's my say to them, really.
Thank you very much indeed. Rosa Sally, it's been a pleasure. And on behalf of listeners to IndieLive.radio, thank you for your contribution to the IndiePram podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Library.